So what we're going to do in this section is I'm just going to start by explaining a bit about self-harm, what it is, and to give us some pointers for how to start with people when someone's referred to us who is actually self-harming. So I want to start with a story, first of all. When I was at university a few years ago, I lived on a floor with a 21-year-old girl. And one day, she showed me her arms, and they were covered in scars to the extent that there really was no normal skin on her arms at all. And I remember being so, on one hand, I was shocked, but on the other hand, I was really horrified. I didn't really want to look at her arms because they looked so terrible. Her story was that at the age of 7, her mother had had an affair and left the family. And when that didn't work out, the mum came back. And then again, when my friend was 11, the mum left home again and went to live with another woman this time. So as my friend reached adolescence, she was depressed and sexually confused, and she began to cut her arms, often necessitating trips to A&E. And this grew worse and more frequent, and she was so depressed in the end that she was actually sectioned. When I met her, she was in a lesbian relationship and she had stopped cutting. I just want to reassure you that you won't be referred someone like this, but I just want you to think about what your reactions are to the story. What are your reactions when somebody says self-harm? Is it, ooh, I don't know what I do with self-harm, or the thought of somebody cutting or hurting themselves? Because I think we can experience just difficulties in even thinking about helping somebody with self-harm because it can seem quite other. It's quite a different thing. We really try to avoid pain in the main. And so to be able to understand and get alongside somebody who's choosing to hurt themselves can be quite difficult. So I think it's helpful to equip ourselves with some basic knowledge to help us understand the people that we see. So people may be referred to us because they are self-harming, but it may well be that they disclose that they're self-harming when we started to see them about some other issue. So I don't want you to feel alarmed should that happen, because you will have all the equipment you need when you've done the referral training. You will just... So, what is self-harm? Well, it's a label, really. It's a label given to habits where people hurt themselves as a way of dealing with very difficult feelings, old memories, or overwhelming situations they're currently in, and experiences. And it can be physical harm such as cutting, sometimes burning themselves. I'm not going to go into lots of detail about this. It can also be putting themselves in risky situations or not looking after their physical needs properly. But I think we tend most often to associate self-harm with cutting. But there are other physical manifestations of that, like hitting themselves or hitting a wall with a fist, excessive exercise, scratching, pulling out hair. Eating disorders will come under this a bit, and Irene will be looking at that later. So I want us to think about, you know, how we begin to help somebody who is self-harming. I think really there are two aspects to a strategy that we have, and I just want to say that everything that I say, it obviously comes under the umbrella of what Steve's already been talking about and how important listening is with people. So the first thing is that we want to help the person work through the underlying issues. Now, they're not often going to come and say to you, my underlying issue is. So you need to use those questioning skills. That's part of listening, isn't it? Drawing out the information. So this is where the main focus of your work will be with people, is to be dealing with the underlying issue, because self-harm is not the issue. Self-harm is a symptom of something else that's going on. and we can feel like we need to fix the self-harm. But actually, that's probably not going to happen in entirety until you've really looked at some of the issues underneath. Okay, and secondly, I want to equip us with some practical strategies which are used by health professionals and other people, which are just practical things people can do. They're strategies to help them stop the practice of self-harm, but they're not going to be dealing with that underlying thing. They're a tool that we may or may not get to use with people, depending on how long we spend with them. We're certainly not going to say in the first session, here's a strategy, now just stop that self-harm. Because it really isn't like that. People don't choose to do something like this for no reason. Okay, so who self-harms? Well, the NICE website, you know, the government health website, says that self-harm often starts in teenage years, but it can go on through adult life. Overall, women are more likely to self-harm than men, and this is most pronounced in adolescence, where girls may be 3 times more likely to self-harm than boys. I'm just going to put up a case study. All of these case studies are situations that I've known about. So here we have a young woman in the church had a relationship with a non-Christian. The relationship was physically abusive, which resulted in her cutting herself. She has ended the relationship and no longer cuts herself. However, she struggles with anxiety and now has a problem with scratching her arms whenever she feels anxious. Her arms show scars from scratches which have not been allowed to heal. No one else knows about this, as she always keeps her arms covered. So what's the underlying issue, do you think? What would be a clue in there? Things that need to be looked at in the past. Yeah, I think I'm just looking at the underlying issue and the anxiety here. There's an anxiety issue that's arising from that. Yeah, so these are just little scenarios. We're not going to get to the whole of the thing, but I just want you to get the sense of we're looking at not just the scratching in that previous one. So here, a man is on benefits and has a gambling habit that is out of control. Whenever he receives his benefits, he feels good because he has money in his hand. He gambles to get more money. When this doesn't happen and he loses all his money, he has intense feelings of frustration and remorse. He punches into a glass tumbler, breaking it and cutting his knuckles, resulting in frequent trips to A&E. I think for me, I struggled to think of a situation where I knew about a man self-harming because it tends to be women that, well, obviously, I probably only see women anyway. but I think I just want you to see that there are different ways that people are hurting themselves as a means to coping. And then, next one, a young girl is bullied at school. Other pupils single her out for name-calling and sometimes physical abuse. Consequently, she has a very low self-esteem. She says that she hates herself. When feelings of self-loathing overwhelm her, she cuts herself. Even a look from someone else may trigger a cutting episode. Inside her head, she is saying, I feel like I want to cut myself because that person doesn't like me. And that can sound, on one level, that can sound to us, that's very trivial, almost a very lightweight thing. But for somebody at this age experiencing these things, and when they're really learning about who they are, these become very major issues, or can do. So that's just a few case studies, so just to get an idea about the kind of people that self-harm. But why do they actually do it? What do they get from it? Well, self-harm is a habit formed as a coping mechanism. So what it is, it's enabling them to cope with intense feelings of pain, and it's their way of managing it. Physical pain causes the brain to release endorphins, which may provide a temporary high. But also there can be a sense of sedation of the actual emotional pain, so that the physical pain is kind of a displacement of that internal pain. It's quite hard when we haven't been involved in anything like this to quite understand the links between what the original pain is and why people are actually hurting themselves. So any difficult experience might cause someone to self-harm. So Irene's going to talk about abuse in a moment. That is obviously a big issue. It can be pressures at school or work, can be bullying, money worries, bereavement, confusion about sexuality, breakdown of relationships. Interestingly, on the website I was looking at, it said that a significant proportion of people who have a serious illness also self-harm. Now, that's just an interesting thing to bear in mind if you're supporting anybody. This is the way that some people have described self-harm. It's a way to express something that's hard to put into words. So it's kind of giving a physical expression. It makes experiences, thoughts or feelings that feel invisible because they're internal, somehow visible. And it can help to change emotional pain into physical pain or reduce overwhelming emotions, feelings or thoughts. Somebody else said it can give them a sense of being in control. It's a way to escape traumatic memories. Now this one is interesting, to stop feeling numb, disconnected or dissociated. When people have experienced trauma in their past, they may have dissociated themselves from it so that they can kind of look at it as though they're another person and not feel in touch with the feelings as a kind of numbness when they look at that picture of themselves. And that the self-harm is a way of making myself feel the things that are inside. So that's another reason why people might do this. It can create a reason to physically care for yourself. If you feel really bad about yourself and nobody cares about you and you don't care about you, you could do something like this to actually make sure that you have a reason to care for yourself. To express suicidal thoughts and feelings without taking your own life, and to communicate to other people that you're in severe distress. So how can we help? What are we going to do? I just want to reiterate what's been said before. You're not to feel responsible. If somebody does not stop self-harming, that is not your responsibility. And you can feel that with something like that seems as serious as self-harm, because people are actually burning themselves or bleeding. You could take on responsibility that's really not yours. So don't ever feel, I must make them stop. They've probably been doing this for some time already before they come to you. So know your limits. It's important to establish the severity of the self-harm. People who are serious, repetitive self-harmers with a history of suicide attempts or talk about wanting to die should be referred for more specialist help. And you'll need to talk to your referral team leader there. I think it would be a good idea for you, and I think we'll probably post this on the group, for you all to have a look at our suicide guidelines. This is not because you are going to be referred someone who's suicidal, but should suicidal feelings come up, there's a tool to help you assess the severity of that and what to do next. So our attitude is important. It's common for people to feel that they will be judged for their self-harm. So it's important we maintain the helper's qualities that we spoke about last time. Do you remember we talked about unconditional positive regard? Self-harmers often think that they'll be labelled as attention-seeking. Use all the listening and questioning skills you've learned. Try to find out what the pain is that they're managing with their self-harm. And this is where your work is focusing on the issues and the pain that they're experiencing. At the same time, show concern for their injuries, but relate to them as a whole person, not just as someone who self-harms. Because the self-harm can be the thing, and the person can then acquire this identity of a self-harmer. Okay? And we want to see them as a whole person. We want to communicate that there's hope for change and understand that they may be scared of stopping self-harm. If this has been your way of dealing with pain, you're going to find it really hard to think about stopping. And you may well be thinking, well, what am I going to do then? What am I going to do when I feel like that? How can I cope? So these are going to be some big things for people. I just want to really quickly just run through just helping people. One of the things that we can help people to do is to... I keep moving away from you. Is to understand the triggers, the things that happen. Because I said it's a habit, it's a learned behaviour. So, something happens. Maybe it's the anniversary of a particular event. Maybe they see somebody. It might be a physical sensation or particular thoughts and feelings. These are kind of a trigger that's in a way external. If you can get people to, they may not be able to talk about it at the time, but get them to write a diary of how did I feel before, how did I feel after, and how did I feel during the self-harm. You may begin to help them understand what their triggers are. When that trigger occurs, often there's an urge in the person to actually do the self-harm, whatever it is that they do. And they perhaps might experience physical sensations of nausea, might be really strong emotions, or just thoughts like, I'm going to hurt myself. So one person said, I feel the urge when I have too much feeling inside me, whether it's anger, sadness, or frustration, that I just can't seem to contain it in my mind, and I think self-harming was my way of dealing with it. So if we can help people recognise what the triggers are and what the urges, the immediate urges, then actually we can begin to help them realise that they have a choice. So, gone too far. First choice might be that they will self-harm because they feel that, often people feel they have no choice. But there are other choices. And I don't think that you'll get to this immediately when you're with someone, but we can teach people how to use a distraction technique. So they might do something else, something physical perhaps, and I've given you a list of techniques on your handout so that we don't need to go with them. But what that can do is just take the focus off themselves physically and onto something else. The other technique would be delay. Just putting it off. I know that can sound a bit weak, but if somebody can put something off for half an hour, they can learn to put it off for an hour. You know, and these are not like biblical principles, these are practical helps that the helping professions would give to people who self-harm. So there's the distraction. There's a runner distracting. And I think this is just quite helpful if you have this in mind, that there's a process behind self-harm. That there's a trigger that happens that can be identified. Then there's even the urge that they feel, identifying that for themselves. And then perhaps giving people some distraction techniques, something they could do instead. But I don't want you to get the idea that you're going to be able to do this straight away. You'll give somebody a sheet of distractions and they'll just come back next week and say it's all been wonderful. Because the reality is you're going to be working through underlying issues. And so this may come quite a bit further down the line. It might be something you can talk about early on, but they're just things that you could bear in mind when you're with someone, that there are some practical helps that people can adopt. So how do I start? What do you do? I've got a self-harmer coming to see me. What do I do? Well, you sit down, you take a deep breath, and then you start to ask them some questions. So after your initial questions, you might talk about, can you tell me what you actually do? Can you tell me how you feel just before it happens, or during or after? What does it do for you? Why do you think you do it? Begin to explore emotions that they've identified, such as anxiety, fear, anger, any of those things. Okay, so it might be anxiety. What makes you feel anxious? Can you think of a time when you feel anxious? Can you remember when this began? And this is where using a timeline can be very helpful, because we can get an idea of what's happened in people's past that will give us perhaps some clues in to getting into these issues that underlie that. So I hope that that will be a helpful way to begin to open up the issues with people. So that's really a bit of a whistle-stop tour of self-harm, but I think it's, you know, let's take the fear factor out of it. It's not this great big enormous thing. We just do the same things that we do with other people. We just ask some questions and we get alongside them.